Welcome to Oral Fixation. This is Andy, and this episode, Drew and I cover Tracy Chapman by Tracy Chapman. This piece was released on Elektra Records in 1988, and all audio samples you hear in this episode are entirely for the purposes of review and critique. Just some light housekeeping, Drew and I are still recording remotely, and our microphones have picked up a smattering of birdsong here, a sprinkling of torrential rain there. We hope it doesn't distract too much from the listening experience, and we thank you for your patience. Another big thank you goes out to online pop stan at That Don't Impress Me Much, who quite rightly insisted we should cover this subject. Anyway, let's crack on, take your fast car and keep on driving. We can match it up. Drew, you were just saying off mic that you had something to tell me. You had a little nugget to share with me.
I just realised, this is a completely independent thought, but I just had this thought. It came to me that talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. A whisper.
What gave you that idea? I've never heard it described that way before.
I don't know, but as soon as I had that thought, I jumped in my car and I drove... really, really speedily.
No, you're being greedy now. You're being incredibly greedy. Snorting up all the references for your oxen self. Now, I'll tell you
something. I'm sorry for being an ox.
We apologise. I'll tell you something. Did you know that Ms. Tracy Chapman wrote Talking About a Revolution at the age of 16?
I never realised until today... doing a bit of research, that she was a protest singer. She'd be at rallies. She'd be at protests.
Was this before or sit-ins. After you heard the song Talking About a Revolution?
Well, look. Well, actually, that's a really good point. Until you suggested Tracy, I know Tracy, Tracy Cohen. Shout out to Tracy Cohen. From the X Factor, but I only know this album. I don't know any other songs by Tracy, but I hadn't really listened to the lyrics of the in detail. I kind of knew roughly that I knew it was very political, and I knew it was very
You'd heard the song, but you hadn't heard the song.
But now when it's like talking about a revolution, obviously she's standing up on stage at some sort of protest and she's like, guys, folks, you know, we have to rise up. We have to rally.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was listening to the album again through that lens. It's kind of wild that it seems to kind of evoke such a specific time. And I love that it was made in the 80s, in like the late 80s. It does not sound 80s-ish to me. If anything, it sounds kind of a bit 70s. But obviously there was such a want for it and such a need for it and such a... it was received, it was kind of consumed so with such vigour.
20 million albums sold worldwide. And listeners, welcome to Oral Fixation. If you haven't already gathered, we are here to talk today about the album Tracy Chapman by the artiste Tracy Chapman, released in 1988. And if you're new to Oral Fixation, welcome. Come on in. It's queer in here. And usually the format of Oral Fixation is... each episode we take either an album made by a queer artist or appreciated and loved by queer people, and we pull it apart, we dissect, we disseminate. What else do we do, Drew?
We talk not only about revolutions, we talk about whispers. We talk about fast cars.
Boyzone.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it. Oh my god, I just cannot wait to talk about Boyzone. So
Tracy, Andy. Fuck Tracy's drag. You're here for Ronan Keating.
Yeah, right. Coming soon to the pod. Literally Ronan, he's got nothing else on. What was... do you have like a memory of first kind of seeing or hearing Tracy Chapman?
I do not remember a time when I was not aware of the song Fast Car.
Right.
But on listening to this album, I've got a memory of feeling pretty certain that Talking About a Revolution was a cover of someone else's song. And to find out, and that later on, actually, my first impression of Baby, Can I Hold You Tonight was by an Irish boy band.
It was Boyzone.
Was kind of mind-blowing that, you know, the subject we're talking about today probably received an email from Louis Walsh, you know? Another queer icon.
Sorry, something just slammed Louis, quite hard upstairs. Louis Walsh, you know, is queer.
Well, he literally is queer. And actually on that, I want to say something before we really get into the meat of this, which is a little bit like our episode on Sophie and Stevens.
Mm.
Or Sophie and Stephen.
Yes, God, okay, go on.
Shaking Stevens.
I'm smelling what you're stepping in. Go on.
So according to my research, correct me if you've read differently, and actually listeners, if you know differently, please write in. Tracy Chapman, we are covering today on Oral Fixation because it's our belief, it's kind of internet knowledge documented that she is queer. However, Tracy has never gone on record as discussing or confirming her own queerness. We actually only know it because of her exes. So her exes, people like the artist Alice Walker, who wrote The Colour Purple, she's talked before about their years-long relationship. So it's kind of, you know, it's a fact, but it just feels a bit weird, and it's something good to clarify that the person we are talking about has not spoken about their sexuality with this frankness or openness. So, you know, I'm pretty certain that we're not speculating, but it's also just something to kind of clear the air about. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. And I think, like we said in the Sufjan episode, this is not an exercise in outing anybody. You know, this is not the first time that someone has referenced that Tracy Chapman might be queer. But it's not about outing them or sort of, I guess, even taking them to task for not being out. It's just, it's an opportunity to speak about her music and her impact and the fact that she is likely queer qualifies her to be a subject for discussion on Oral Fixation.
Well, absolutely. And actually, closing the loop on this, we just referenced how enormous this album was and how she just went to stratospheric fame so high. I'm not certain that that was off the back of her queerness, but it's pretty fucking cool that in 1988 an album by a queer black woman sold 20 million records, and I think that is one of the coolest things about Tracy Chapman. So yeah, it's not relevant, but it is relevant, and we tread the line. Just going back to that, you asked me what my first interaction was with Tracy Chapman. What was yours?
Well, as I was asking you that, I was thinking to myself, what was mine? And I probably reckon I saw on did you have Sky as a kid?
Sky. We had Sky.
Sky. You're a Sky family. on one of the sort of like throwback music channels like Magic or one of those, I remember I would have seen the Fast Car video and probably wondering to myself what the gender of the person on the TV was, because Tracy looked, she had a pretty short short afro, and it's a very kind of like, it's lit so it's pretty dark around her and just a spotlight on her face. And her voice is so kind of deep and, you know, brooding that I wondered to myself, oh, as a child of probably about 7 or 8, oh, I wonder if that's a boy or a girl. Not sort of, I guess, what was happening now I look back on it, there was sort of, I guess, queer codes in her aesthetic that led me to question that. But I definitely remember that kind of visual, I guess, understanding of Tracy. And then being so struck by this simple, beautiful song that's just so full of longing and despair and hope, all kind of wrapped up into one. It's so... Fast Car is sort of, you know, it's one of those songs that everybody knows. We've all heard it a million times, but it really is so sad and consuming as a piece of narrative storytelling. It's really, really, you're in there straight from the beginning, and there's the sort of the lows of the character's life and sort of their situation, and then this sort of hope when a lover arrives that it'll be something different, but then learning that their lover is actually very similar to their parent, and kind of repeating that story. It's just so, it really is so kind of consuming, and I was so taken with it when I first heard it. And still to this day, you know, when you hear that song, you just can't help but get that pang of emotion listening to Fast Car.
Yeah, it's a pretty special song, isn't it? And I completely understand what you just said, and I felt those feelings when I was younger, just at how sad and kind of the injustice of it all, that that person A, you know, escaped from parent and met person B, who turned out to be like parent, but actually as an adult, and knowing what I, you know, would hope to think a lot more now than I knew then, it actually just speaks to me, just the sadness of the cycle repeating itself. And actually, yeah, in so many families and countries and parts of the world, pretty much anywhere, when abuse or addiction or economic depravity comes into play, it's so hard to break that cycle. And the song is like this journey, like you said, it starts so hopeful, and there's verses and choruses which remain hopeful, they're so beautiful, but the fact that even by the end of the song, she talks in the verse about how, you know, she speaks kind of like she's given up, you know, you're just the same as my parent, blah, blah, blah. But then she repeats the hopeful chorus, that really spectacular chorus, which just sends shivers down your spine, where she's singing about driving in that car, speed so fast I felt like I was drunk. Like, literally, it's making the hairs on my arms stand up right now. To follow, to repeat that verse after kind of acknowledging that, you know, you're never going to break this cycle and you're stuck here forever, is so sadder for me. You go on this emotional journey and you end in this, like, pit of... It's just so sad.
Yeah.
But... there's also a really fantastic video on YouTube of her performing this song at Nelson Mandela's 70th birthday celebration at Wembley Stadium, which had a global audience of 600 million people. And also there's something really cool about a working class woman singing to working class people, a black, queer, working class woman, like singing a story that sadly would be so familiar to so many people listening to it.
Yeah. And that I got that impression listening more recently. There's a lot of that. You know, songs like Across the Lines is literally about living in a situation where white people are separated from black people, and the kind of the difficulties that instills in the community.
Do you think that was about South Africa, which would have been still in apartheid then?
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, that's. I reckon that's a great. Definitely, the parallels there stand. But yeah, I think it's a really sort of. Throughout the album, there are these threads of. Socioeconomic kind of, for want of a better word, you know, injustice or depravity of some kind, even in like Mountains of Things, one of my favorite songs on the album. It's sort of kind of almost like playful, sort of, it's teasing about, you know, when I die, I'll be buried with all of my belongings, essentially. But it's still, there's still a big kind of, as I say, socioeconomic kind of thread in that song as well. And it's sort of, it's been a really interesting process to re-listen to it now, because when I was younger, I would listen to this album. It was just sort of an album that would just be on in the house. And you just kind of like know Midler. The songs. And it's very Bette Midler. You just sort of know the songs and love them. And they just kind of, they provide this sort of, this backing track to your sort of day-to-day goings on. But now, actually, re-listening to it, there's so much going on that is so much bigger than just sort of background music. And a lot of it that I can sort of receive on a visceral level, but really sort of can't even begin to comprehend on a on an actual, you know, day-to-day personal level. But that's why I think it's it's stood the test of time. The lyrics that are in this album are sadly still relevant.
Yeah, the
today.
Fact that it stood the sense of time, I thought, like, that's actually just kind of sad that Behind the Walls, like, listening to that, someone could literally have, like, written that now, like, last year, this year, and that's not necessarily a good thing at all.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Reflective of reality, perhaps. I did not know, like, the story of how this album was made. So, obviously, her debut, she was at university, and a fellow student of hers happened to have a father who owned a publishing company, and he was like, "You're amazing, we need to sign you." And she was just like, "Lol,
you
no.
are."
Like, she was like, just not taking it seriously. Tracy, if you're listening, did you just love that impression of you? I'm sure it's very realistic. But I just love that, you know, sadly, you know, as the world runs, it's not what, you know, it's who, you know, but in this case, it worked well for Tracy, that she knew someone who actually had a leg in there. And, you know, apparently people didn't want to produce it. It was too acoustic. And in the 80s, that was actually a really interesting thing that you mentioned, that it, to you, it doesn't sound 80s, it sounds 70s. But then it's a precursor to so many of those singer-songwriter albums that we know from the early 90s as well. So it seemed to kind of fill this...
I reckon it ushered in that era.
Possibly, yeah. But maybe in the 80s, this is just pure speculation, after so many years where, you know, synth pop has been so popular and dominated the charts, maybe people were yearning again for that more earnest, soulful, for want of a better word, authentic kind of music that they wouldn't have had for a few years, that, like you said, was present in the 70s and then came back around in the 90s. So maybe this kind of started that new wave.
Yeah, I reckon.
Apparently, a proposed producer for the album was killed in a car accident.
I read that. I was like, I was gagged. And then they got some sort of, like, underling to produce it.
Well, thank you, underling. thank you, Tracy.
Shout out to the underlings of the world.
We've covered Fast Car. We've touched a little bit on talking about Revolution, but that does open the album. It is amazing that she wrote it when she was 16. Did you have anything more you wanted to say about the song? It's pretty special.
Talking about a revolution, because it's the opening of the album, that to me just transports me in time to my childhood of the album being put on. And a friend of mine once said to me, shout out to Harriet, who I know doesn't listen to the podcast because the last time I was in the UK, she told me. She said, "What's the name of your podcast again?" I said, "Okay, we've got a non-believer in our midst." But
we stand
she
honesty,
said to me,
Harriet.
Yeah, we stand, look, we stand an honest queen. She said to me, there are two types of household in this world. There are Tracy Chapman households and there are non-Tracy Chapman households. And I, for one, was raised in a Tracy Chapman household. And I don't know if I've got much time for people that weren't raised in Tracy Chapman households. And when she said that to me, I was like, well, look, you know, we'll never say never, but I'm glad to tell you that I was raised in a Tracy Chapman household.
Say Tracy Chapman household again. you know?
Tracy Chapman household. I was in a TCH for many years. And it just, talking about a revolution is, you know, yes, it's a protest song, and it's the lyrics are so kind of, I would say, political, but hopeful. But it's just so comforting to me. Every time, like, I've been listening to the album kind of on repeat for the past couple of weeks, and every time the album starts again and I get that beginning of talking about a revolution, it's like putting on a lovely warm jumper. It is just a sonic hug, and of all of the songs on the album, I think that is probably the one I connect with the most, because it's just so nostalgic to me, and sort of, it's so known and so lovely, and yeah, I just really appreciate that song. Do you have any more thoughts on revolutions or otherwise?
Well, apparently in 2018, Nicki Minaj used an unauthorized sample of the song in her song Sorry, which I actually haven't heard of. Sorry about that. But it's playing right now for listeners.
That's not talking about a revolution. That's Baby Can I Hold You, isn't it?
Is it really?
Yeah. Because it's like, sorry is all that you can
stop,
say.
Stop.
No, we're keeping this in, bitch.
No, we're not. Edit that out. I'm editing this one. So you just asked me about my thoughts on talk about revolution. No, just that the lyric, sitting around waiting for a promotion, speaks to me, you know.
Because finally, are you listening, employers? Employers.
I actually said on a work call today, where my manager was on the work call, I just said, if anyone knows anyone who works at Spotify, can you connect me? Because I really want a job there. And someone was like, did you actually just say that in front of your manager? And I'm like, honesty is best policy. I'm not here to deceive anyone. Like, we should talk about our dreams. Tracy wrote an album about her dreams. You know, and I'm following in Tracy's footsteps.
And I guess sorry is all that you can say at that point.
Wow. You
know, forgive me.
onto the famed Boyzone cover. So I learnt today, Drew, that song was sampled by Nicki Minaj in 2018.
Was it?
In a song. In a song called Sorry. That I think you can do a little ditty of, can you? Usually we play the music and we sound bed it, but I think you can just sing it for our listeners.
Well, interestingly, because it never got released, right? And I think, I found some like demos on YouTube today.
Ooh.
All of varying quality, and sort of even, I guess, question. I was like, I don't think this is Nicki Minaj's voice, but yeah, she uses the sort of refrain of like, you know, sorry is all that you can say, words don't come easily.
So do it blah, though. Blah, blah. Do it.
Sorry is all that you can say. I'm already skewing Keating.
You skew Keats.
I'm skewing Gately.
You know what? Shout out to Queer Icon Stephen Gately. We love you, Stephen.
Quick fix on New Beginnings coming soon.
Yeah. I don't actually know her, but I do know Stephen, and I just stan Stephen's existence. So yeah. Rest in peace and rest in power.
Rest in power,
but
Stephen
apparently, the trial was only resolved, well, the issue was only resolved in January this year, when Nicki paid Tracy $450,000 to stop it going to trial. So, kuching. And
yeah, good on
actually,
you. That's your pandemic paid for. You know, done.
How rich do we think Tracy is right now?
Well, I was thinking this, because she's had a fair few albums, but none really to this level. And I imagine, I don't know, I often wonder if, you know, debut albums that just blow up, the artists probably didn't get like the best deal.
True.
When it comes to like, you know, remuneration. So I don't know, but I reckon she's all right. But I also don't reckon that she wants for much. She kind of like stays pretty under the radar, right?
She's chilling.
She's chilling. But the thing that interested me about the Nicki Minaj thing is that why... Because I was reading about that and she said... There was a quote that I'm sort of... I'm going to misquote it, but it was something like, I just don't
You just
do
said
that.
Charity I'd... shop Sue Eyes.
Have you seen Kylie... Side note, have you seen Kylie and Ollie from Years and Years
yes.
did like a
yes.
switch and Kylie's Charity Shop Sue? We stan you, Charity Shop Sue. And look, coming soon to the pod, I'm going to reach out. But anyway, to go back to my point...
It's been discussed before.
Well... She said something like, I just don't really let my songs be used by other people. But the thing that's weird about that is the Boyzone cover happened. But then more recently, there's like a Tropical House remix of Fast Car that a lot of people would say like really bastardizes that song. And I'm just so surprised yeah. that she signed that off, but she didn't sign off Nicki Minaj using... Baby, Can I Hold You?
But Diva, maybe this is what it's all about. Maybe it was Boyzone that really fucked her off. Maybe she was like, nah, after this hetty Irish bullshit, no one else gets to sample or cover me. And but then that doesn't explain
the Tropical
Jungle
House Fast Car was like a couple of years ago.
So the mysteries of Tracy Chapman's publishing deal.
She keeps such a low profile, we can't even reach out to her. To ask.
What other songs did you like on this album?
Mountain of Things is up there with me. It gives me very much... Have you seen... I mean, what am I saying? Of course you have. You're that Disney stan. It gives me very He Lives in You, Lion King musical vibes. Mountains of Things or Mountain of Things. Can't remember if it's singular or plural, but look, the mountain is, you know, hypothetically there. The things aren't. But yeah, that's definitely one of my big ones. And I also love For My Lover.
Love that. That's beautiful. My soft spot is for the album closer, For You.
Yeah, that's a very sort of... It's not quite Morning Fog and Alta Dena. It's more The Night's Over and I'm going to get... a little tumbler of whiskey and I'm gonna sit by the fire with my loved one and just sort of reminisce.
And now we come to the part of the show where we discuss, are we imprinting queerness on people or is the queerness shining through? Because I hear you when you say that as a young little fag, you absorbed
those were my words verbatim.
you were picking up what Tracy was putting down in terms of the way that her clothing was coded queer and the way that maybe she didn't feel entirely comfortable presenting stereotypically female. So you were picking up those signals. And I do wonder, when I was listening to For You, I was thinking, now this sounds to me like a love song, a ballad written by a woman to a woman. But am I just... imprinting the queerness that I know of Tracy on that, or is the song actually objectively a bit queer because she
My question to you would be, well, first and foremost, like, we all imprint on music. That's what we're doing the whole time.
That's
listening
what
to
we're here
music.
To do.
You know, but what was it in particular that made you feel like it could have been queer-coded?
I think the most scientific, succinct thing I can say is it just sounds very lesbian.
Right. Is it giving you Damn I Wish I Was Your Lover tease?
Oh, now there's a quick fix for your nerve. It's playing now, so listeners, tell me if I am onto something or whether I am just desperately clinging for any scrap and remnant of Tracy acknowledging her sapphic lady love. I don't know, but it's either way, it's a beautiful song. Tying it back into Is She Queer, Is She Not, Who Cares? It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a bit of column A, a bit of column B, probably.
I did actually listen to a really interesting podcast where A black gay man spoke of his devotion to Tracy. She was really formative to him in terms of his own songwriting ambitions. And he also saw her visibility as a bit of a thumbs up to being black and queer in the media in the 90s and the 2000s. However, he did say that, personally speaking, his want and opinion was that she had been more vocal. And I think this ties us back to what we said at the start, which is it is just actually a really interesting topic. That as queer people, especially in the last 20, 30 years, well, no, beyond, forever, we have strived to see ourselves reflected in the media, in pop culture, in art. We will always want that for various reasons. So that's a valid desire, I think, of anyone who's queer to want to see elements of themselves reflected in the art that they're consuming. But it gets tricky when you demand it from someone or discuss them possibly owing it, because actually no one owes anyone anything. Or do they? This is just where I'm trying to like unravel this. Does someone, you know, with a remit of, with a range of 20 million albums, morally have an obligation to discuss their queerness more openly in a time, and I'm not talking about now, I'm talking maybe more about the 90s, when queer people were definitely more subjugated than they are now. Well, not definitely, but, you know, we've come, we need to go a lot further, but we have made progress since the 90s. Can you actually just say that there is a moral obligation? Or is it just, no, we're not crossing that line, it's everyone's own decision and responsibility to tell their truth? And I actually don't know what my view is. I'm just putting the cat amongst the queer pigeons.
Oh, there's a cat amongst all my queer pigeons. Look, I actually think that I tend to be of the school of thought that it's the latter. Like, I don't think that anybody is obliged to sort of speak out on anything. I think that we put a lot of pressure on visible people and treat them like role models because I think, as you quite rightly say, Andy, we are looking for that representation. I think it would be probably a bit tone deaf of me to say Tracy should have said that she was queer in the 90s as a cisgendered white man living in 2021 who came out relatively easily with a handshake and has only ever really had to deal with their own kind of a bit of bullying at school and their own internalized homophobia. It's just, I don't think there's a one size fits all kind of approach. And if, you know, if we look at the way that Tracy was discovered, as you said, like, it's not like she was out there like pounding the pavements, trying to get signed. She had a mate at uni that had a dad who was a in the industry, and like he put her forward, and then this thing kind of snowballed and ended up being this massive success because it resonated with so many people because it was so simple and beautiful and poignant. But again, it's like she set out to make music and I guess kind of, you know, move people with the songs that she wrote, but she didn't set out to kind of be this like living, breathing, walking example of like how a queer black woman should be. And so it's not really up to me to kind of put that on her or demand that of her because I don't know her experiences or her intentions.
Yeah. I think like, yeah, it was definitely never, I don't want to demand anything from anyone. I don't think either of us would or should. I think it's just more of an interesting kind of philosophical question.
Oh,
and actually,
and
maybe let's, because we are both white and we can only talk about our experience, we can't talk about the black queer experience, even just, you know, talking about maybe a white queer person in the 90s looking for that queer visibility. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I'd probably, I definitely, it's such an interesting discussion, and I definitely, it's not a sort of one size fits all approach. And I think I would hold a white cis man in the 90s more accountable. But but again, you know, there was just so much going on in the 90s, like, that I don't have to really take into consideration now. AIDS, the AIDS epidemic probably being the biggest thing. There was such a huge amount of stigma towards gay men at that time that would have made it really, really difficult for them to speak about their experiences in that way. That is just not as prevalent today, and so makes it easier, I guess, for me to be visible as a queer man. So yeah, but I think I agree with you. I think it's a fascinating topic. I tell you what, I feel like I'd definitely if Sufjan Stevens is queer, it frustrates me that he hasn't been vocal about
right.
it.
Right.
If he yeah. is, versus I find it easier to be frustrated at him than I would Tracy Chapman.
A white man versus a black woman, which I think we're in complete agreement with. Yeah.
And a white man living and existing now.
In the current time. Sort of, I'm glad that you defined that.
Releasing music that is being consumed on a large scale now versus 1988,
which absolutely
was a very different landscape.
Yes, I agree. I think the only other thing that I'll say on this is when I was telling my partner Tom the other day about who we were recording on the next episode of Oral Fixation, and I mentioned it's just really interesting that she's just never ever gone on record as talking about her queerness, and we only know from her exes. And he just said, really kind of like, just casually, well, if she doesn't talk about it, maybe she doesn't want other people to talk about it too. As in, not fuck our drag and we should just quit oral fixation. More of a, maybe the point is she actually only wants people to talk about the music. And you know what? If that's true, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, fuck our drag.
So what, Tom? So we've ostensibly lost a listener, have we?
He's actually made the effort of going onto Apple Podcasts and giving us one star because he doesn't think we should be talking about Tracy Chapman.
Can I say, whoever, the one person that gave us 3 stars versus like 50 reviews of 5 stars, making us a 4.9, you can get rooted.
Get rooted, whoever which you is are, Aussie for get fucked.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else that you wanted to discuss on Ms. Tracy?
She is enigmatic, and I think that again is maybe like why people are drawn to her, because sometimes as queer people, I think we feel representation in the visible things, and sometimes I think we feel representation in the spaces in between. In the not knowing, or the sort of the not alluding, or the not the not using pronouns, the sort of like the Easter eggs or the hints of things, or the nuances, we find the space in that to kind of feel in some way spoken to or represented, and I think that is what Tracy does, and I wonder if that's why her sort of impact, particularly within the queer community, has been so notable, because she doesn't give it all away. She doesn't, you know, she's a very talented storyteller in that she paints a picture for you that's very clear and easy to understand, but she also leaves gaps for you to oscillate in. And I think that that's A, an amazing talent, and B, perhaps the reason why she's so revered.
I think that's spot on. I think you're so right. It was actually only today, after, you know, years and years and years of shout out to years and years of listening to Fast Car, that, you know, we're certain the lyrics speak for themselves. This song is not about the queer experience as such. It's actually about trying to escape economic, you know, abuse and addiction and breaking that cycle. However, the very specific chorus or theme of actually just escape, remove the reasons why, spoke to me a bit differently today as a queer person, in that I think that theme is universally understood by a lot of queer people, of wanting to find someone like you, pack your bags, get in your car, and escape somewhere else and build a new life for yourself. And hopefully less now than it used to be. But I think it's a very relevant theme that a lot of people can relate to. And I don't think that it's one where people often feel like there's like a cycle to break as such. But it did, you know, maybe as a child, just imagining that chorus where, you know, you're driving away in your car with your lover, speed so fast you feel like you were drunk. It's just, actually, maybe it is just a universal, amazing feeling. And that was a different reading I had of Fast Car today.
I am so glad that you just said that, because I have such a vivid memory of hearing that song. Probably not the first time I heard it, but like, you know, being a teenager and hearing it and thinking, I want to run away with someone that gets me and puts their arm around me as they drive, as we sort of escape this thing together. And you're right, that could be a pretty universal thing, but I do think it is a queer, like the sort of the queer love story of it's us against the world, and we're gonna run away in the dead of night. That is just, there's something queer about that, and I think the way that you just articulated that was just so spot on, because it kind of reminded me of my 15-year-old self listening to that song and pining for that situation, for that scenario.
From Tracy Chapman to Carly Rae Jepsen, the theme is timeless.
You know, there's a reason this music resonates with us queers. The only other song I did want to shout out and discuss, just because it's so markedly different from the rest of the album, is Behind the Wall, which is the a cappella, I think it's track 4 maybe, which tells the story of a neighbour overhearing some abuse that their next door neighbour sort of experiencing, from what I understand, domestic violence. And it's so haunting because it's just Tracy's voice. It's so heartbreaking and haunting. And it really kind of, it doesn't necessarily separate the album into two parts, but it really stands alone as this sort of monolith of a song amongst this, amongst the rest of the album. And it's something that I feel like an artist like Tracy Chapman, not many other artists could do something like that, tell that story in such a kind of stark manner that really kind of leaves you a bit shaken. And it's not necessarily, you know, a banger or one I'll sort of go back to a lot, but in and of itself, as a piece of narrative storytelling, it's just so, it's so arresting. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that song.
Actually, don't know if there's anything I could add to that description. It is arresting. And maybe the only thing I'd say is it kind of gives me shivers to imagine, again, like talking about Revolution or Fast Car, imagining people listening to that song, having been through or actually living that experience. And, you know, the power of feeling seen is amazing. But what Tracy's singing about and what she writes about is, I'm sure, actually, unfortunately, all too common in, again, various parts of the world. Yeah. So it would have been pretty powerful in 1988 to devote that space on such a hugely selling album to just this a cappella reading of a really haunting happening. Yes. Mm.
Can I ask you a question? Other than this album, do you know any other music by Tracy Chapman?
I iconically don't, However, today...
Isn't that wild, though? Isn't that crazy?
Because we've known we were recording this episode for a few weeks, so I've been listening to this, actually, for probably about 3 weeks, really, having it on every other day. And today, I was like, right, I know this album inside out now. I do need to branch out a little bit. And I put on her greatest hits. And I didn't do the research to find out what album it's from, but I did add to my monthly playlist, Open Arms. Let me just do a quick Google check to say what album it's from. But while I'm doing that, what about you?
No, this is the crazy thing that I could kick myself. But I don't... I mean, obviously, this was her most commercial and critically acclaimed album. I think she had a couple, and then she came back, and there was another single that she released that did quite well. But as a sort of campaign, nothing ever hit this level again. And I'm just... you know, asking myself, why don't I know more of her music? Why is it sort of not in the public atmosphere more, in the sort of, you know, the canon of great music? And maybe that is because, you know, Tracy does keep herself to herself, and, you know, she had that sort of big debut and won a few Grammys, I believe, but then went back to performing in pretty humble spaces and sort of, and probably quite enjoying that. You know, she's not this huge, for want of a better phrase, she's not this huge star. Like nor does she want to be, I don't think.
No, I think if she wanted to be, she would be.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to dedicate some time to listening to more of her music.
So Open Arms is track 9 on the 1992 album Matters of the Heart. So definitely check that out, listeners. Well, you're listening to it right now because it's sound bedded. We do a lot of sound bedding.
Track 9 of The Bodyguard. It's going to be a lovely day.
Drew, do you have any other AOB for Trace?
The only other thing that I was going to mention about her, her discovery by a guy called Brian Koppelman, which was her friend at uni. He was one of the co-writers of Ocean's 13. So shout out to Brian and that uni random for producing some amazing artists. But I also did want to shout out. So last lockdown, when we were doing our quick fixes, one of the quick fixes that we did was a song for Mattia, which is by Mattia Buena from the Sugar Babes. And she, for this Radio 1 thing, I can't remember what it was, and I mentioned it on that episode, but it wasn't Live Lounge. It was something
it was like 50 years of Radio 1 or something.
Yeah. And she did a cover of Fast Car, which is not an easy thing to do because of that, because of the shared knowledge we have of that song and that the fact that it's just such a relic. But it is such a beautiful cover. It's playing right now in the background, as always. But I
unfortunately, I it's not on Spotify.
You have to find it.
It's so beautiful. Her voice, it's on YouTube. Incredible.
It's just so, like, stunning. And I remember hearing that for the first time, and kind of, I would have been in my early 20s. And this is some tea. I think I'd started sleeping with an ex-boyfriend, and then that kind of feeling again of like wanting to run away or be in a fast car and feel loved and have that person's arm around you was kind of like reintroduced to me, but in this like different way because of where I was in my life. And it's just so good. So shout out to Mattia for that. And then the final question I had for you, Andy, is there an immaculate section for this artist?
My darling, my sweetheart, I could not tell you whether there is an immaculate section for one Tracy Chapman. So unfortunately, I do think on this episode, the immaculate section needs to remain firmly closed.
I've got
one.
I
found one. I found one, my darling. I found one.
God. Madonna's got loads of cars. she drives a Maserati.
Madonna loves revolutions, which loves talking about them. It's a bit loose.
You ain't wrong.
It's a bit loose. So on this Radio 1 On this Radio 1 compilation, you referenced Madonna is the only artist to be featured twice. She was covered by Natasha Bedingfield, who did a cover of Ray of Light.
Oh, God, she did Ray of Light.
She was covered by
Groove
Armada, who covered Crazy for You, which is a bit random. But that is a very tenuous Immaculate section, because that's actually only tied to Mattia and it's not tied to Tracy. But again,
oh, that's true.
Fine.
But yeah. Groove Armada collabed with Mattia. So that's your full circle moment.
Full circle.
There you go. Andy, we mentioned reviews and ratings earlier. Is there anything that you have to say on that matter?
I do. I have something to say. If you have not left us a review, I really don't want to nag you. I'm sorry. We don't like nagging, you know, flashbacks to being woken up by your mum when you're 14 and you just want to sleep in. And she's like, get up, get out, get some sunshine. No one
leave
likes
that podcast
to
review.
Right. But legit, if you listen to us and if you love us, please, it helps us out so much in terms of getting us out to new listeners. And it is the single most powerful thing you could do for us. So please, we'd really, really appreciate that if you could. I know not all apps do it. Spotify doesn't randomly, but Apple, if you're listening, rating review would be amazing. Thank you so much.
And if you're a new listener, it might very well be that you found out about the podcast because of this ratings and review system.
Indeed.
So pay it forward, you know, send the elevator back down. Pay it forward, starring Haley Joel Osment. if you would like to follow us, please do. We are at Oral Fixation Podcast on Instagram, and a little birdie tells me that there's a bit of a new look and feel coming. It's already probably there.
It's already out.
Check it out. and if you'd like to follow me, you can. I'm at With All Drew Respect. Andy is at Andrew Do You Think You Are, Some Kind of Superstar. We absolutely love receiving all of your emails with suggestions of albums for us to cover or your thoughts on opinions that we might have shared. So please email us at oralfixationpodcast@gmail.com. You can check us out on Twitter, which, you know, there is no queerer handle than at Oral Fix Pod. We've done the research, we've checked, and that's fact. We're on Facebook for all of the boomers listening. And we've got a website, which is oralfixationpodcast.com. So we've got ourselves an HTTP, which you can check out as well. /// Should I left the iron on? / No, I haven't.
.co.uk. Thank you, Drew.
Andy.
And thank you, Tracy.
Andy, is there anything else
thank
for you to
you,
add?
Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy. And thank you, employers, potentially, for the promotion.
Coming into my inbox red hot. Gotta love you.
A cease and desist. Love you, doll. And look, we've got lots of exciting guests coming up. So stay tuned every Thursday, every second Thursday in your podcast app. You'll find us like a big gay hug. Show me up and I tell them lies.